recent piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel describes the, quote, almost inconceivable, end quote, failure by the U.S. to confront the COVID-19 pandemic. It says, according to a leading report, America had been the most prepared country in the world. Back in February, President Trump praised that report and assured Americans the U.S. would be able to handle whatever came along.
But we're very, very ready for this, for anything, whether it's going to be a breakout of larger proportions or whether or not we're, you know, we're at that very low level, and we want to keep it that way.
Fast forward to last month, another report noted that while the U.S. accounts for less than 5% of the global population, it represents more than 25% of worldwide COVID cases. It's also in the top 10 of COVID-related deaths per capita. So what happened? Our guest writes that there was a cascade of blunders, some of which go back decades, some happening in the moment. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions and thoughts do you have about how the U.S. responded to COVID? What do you want to know about the nation's plans to deal with a pandemic? How much confidence do you have in the federal government to handle public health emergencies? Have your feelings on that changed as the COVID crisis has played out? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Johnson is a health science and research reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He wrote that in-depth look at pandemic preparedness in the U.S. and how it played out with COVID-19. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Let's talk about that report, pre-pandemic days, that ranked the United States as number one in the world for pandemic preparedness. What kind of things went into that?
They had a group from The Economist that went to every country and looked at records, checked every aspect, basically, of pandemic preparedness. They looked at hospital beds per capita, hospitals, doctors per capita. They looked at aspects like public confidence in government. They looked at the wealth of nations, the plans that they had in place for pandemics. We had a number of different plans at the time, including a presidential playbook. Those things all went into this calculus that was called the Global Health Security Index. And the thing of it was that although we were ranked number one, the index, the sort of message behind it got lost, which was that nobody was truly prepared for a pandemic. And that proved to bear out.
There were a couple reasons for that, some that have happened in the short term, but some, you write, that were building for years. And let's start with those kind of more chronic problems first. One thing you point out, and a lot of experts you talk to point out, was as a nation, for many years, we've been cutting funding and positions for public health jobs. What have we seen?
We lost about 50,000 jobs during the Great Recession. And while jobs in other areas of the economy came back, the public health jobs never did. We also cut, we made significant cuts in preparedness budgets. There was emergency money set aside for pandemics and other disasters that dropped from about $1.4 billion in 2002 to $675 million in 2020. I mean, you can see how huge a loss that is. These are the kind of things, they happen over a long period of time because it's easy to put off warnings. When something's not right in front of you, as an emergency right now, it's easier to handle other things, pick other priorities. People had been warning, a lot of scientists had warned about pandemics for at least 20 or 30 years. You can find U.S. pandemic preparedness plans going back to 1978. But it's one of those things that everyone said was going to happen, but I think the public never, it never registered with the public and certainly never registered with our leadership, with our government.
Talking to Mark Johnson from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about a piece he wrote on what went wrong in the U.S. when it came to the COVID-19 pandemic. That public health investment was one of the long-term chronic things, Mark. Another consistent theme in the shorter run is who led the response. And it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, in our pandemic playbook, pretty much every expert you talk to, the thinking going into a pandemic was the federal government is going to take the lead. They're going to be in the driver's seat. And that didn't necessarily play out that way. Can you talk about that?
That's absolutely true. There were, on all of the different pandemic plans that I looked at, there were two themes that come up again and again. One is that all of the measures needed to be taken very, very quickly. You need to be able to react quickly to a pandemic. The other consistent theme was that the federal government should lead, should coordinate all of the response to a pandemic. It's not the kind of thing you can put on states. And a very good analogy one of the sources I talked to made was when we got attacked on 9/11, George W. Bush didn't delegate counterterrorism to the states. It would have been absurd to do that. States don't have that kind of wherewithal. We don't. It would have been a real problem in terms of coordinating what one state knew with what another state knew. They needed to have solid coordination at the federal level, and that was something that was sorely missing.
So what did that end up looking like? It was delegated, in effect, in this case, to the states, where we'd seen a decline in the number of public health jobs to begin with. What were some of the consequences of that?
Some of the consequences were that you saw states scrambling to get equipment that they should already have had. And we had a strategic national stockpile. And contrary to some of the reports that came out in the immediate aftermath of the of COVID-19 arriving, the strategic national stockpile, as this administration had inherited it from President Obama, was actually pretty well stocked. The problem was that preparedness money got cut. The amount of money that Obama had asked for in his last year as president was cut by about $20 million. And he had asked for, that was an increase that he'd asked for. In his time in office, President Trump asked for zero increase, no extra dollars. And I think that that left us in a position where we didn't have masks, we didn't have ventilators, we didn't have a strong network of federal health officials to guide the states on things like contact tracing, which can be very, very important early in a pandemic. So I think there was a very poor combination of things. Health had been underfunded both at the federal level and at the state level. And we'd had a change in administration where I think the threat of a pandemic just had been allowed to take a back seat in terms of priorities. I mean, it was only a threat. I think that this administration had priorities in other areas.
We're looking back at how prepared the U.S. was for COVID-19, where it dropped the ball, especially in the earlier stages of the pandemic. Mark Johnson is with us, health and science reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the preparation plans here in the U.S.? How do you feel about these thoughts that the U.S. didn't do a good job responding to COVID-19? How much confidence do you have in the federal government to effectively deal with pandemics? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the U.S. early response to the coronavirus pandemic with Mark Johnson, health and science reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He recently wrote an in-depth piece on how the U.S. was, according to one report, the most prepared country in the world to deal with the pandemic, but had a slow response that didn't follow the nation's own playbook. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Josh is with us in Eau Claire. Josh, hi.
My question is, Hi, my question is if there's been any talk at the state level of starting to create our own stockpile of materials in case the federal government in the future lets us down again.
Josh, thanks for the call. In effect, that's what states were kind of scrambling to do earlier this year, Mark.
I think it's probably not a bad idea, but it really is the federal government's job to be ready for something like this. And my guess is that after the way that this has gone, a lot of there will be many reports in the coming years that will look back at the mistakes that we made. I think the strategic national stockpile will never again be allowed to get to such a low level. I don't think that we'll be underfunding public health to the degree that we have been. My sense, I'm an optimist, but I really believe that we'll learn some painful lessons from this.
Thanks for the call, Josh. Another thing you write about, Mark, is the clock in our pandemic playbook and when events happened and what was supposed to happen in our response. How did that line up?
Well, again, we were very slow. Within the first week or so of the pandemic, the announcements from China, we knew very early on that this was a serious threat. As soon as it was clear that it was a new coronavirus and that it could transmit from person to person, that was basically the signal. And we were seeing things get really bad in the middle of January. I think a lot of people forget that. I think it was around the third week of January, there were YouTube videos of dozens and dozens of bulldozers in Wuhan building a hospital in 10 days. That's a level of urgency that a lot of public health officials here felt, but at the government level, at the federal level, it did, for some reason, it didn't signal. We should have had, within the first week or two in early January, we should have had the federal officials essentially checking with states. How prepared were they? What equipment did they have? What did they need? What was their situation like in terms of hospital capacity? Were they likely to run out of beds? The United States didn't declare a public emergency until 2 months into the pandemic. It was in around mid-March that the public health emergency was finally declared. By that time, it was really late in the game.
Let's bring on another caller now. Mark is with us in Fort Atkinson. Mark, hi.
Hello. I want to kind of echo what he says. The slowness of getting on board, but it was precipitated for political purposes. When Trump saw that it was going to be an economic disadvantage, he didn't see it as being a damage to the country as a whole. He saw it as a damage to his political prospects and to his the people that he was beholden to as far as his ability to hold his power base together. And he immediately circled the wagons and began to play into the needs of his power base and completely ignored the welfare of our country.
Mark, thanks for the call. Mark Johnson, you write about the politicized part of this and how that hurt the response.
Definitely. Just for a reminder, it was late January that the president's national security advisor told him this is going to be the most serious national security threat that you face. And we find out through Bob Woodward's book that the president made a decision to downplay the seriousness of the virus. I think this was the beginning of there being mixed messages, which was, I think, at the root, one of the most critical problems in our pandemic response. The fact that he was going around saying that this would resolve soon, we had it under control, warmer weather, it would probably go away. The need to avoid a panic, I think, to a lot of people is understandable. But I think you have to look at it this way, that the American people are adults. They're not children. And we've had to learn about hard truths before. There was no denying what happened to us on 9/11. And I think it wasn't sugarcoated. George W. Bush told us that this was going to be a long war. It wasn't going to be something that was over with quickly. In this case, I think we were being told exactly the opposite of what the CDC leaders and what our a lot of our public health leaders at the state level were hearing. They were scared. And I think that it must have been very confusing for a lot of people early on.
In our last just under a minute, Mark, you talked to a lot of public health experts. Is there any sense from them that we have learned lessons, we're doing better in some ways now?
I think there is. The problem is that as we get closer and closer to the election, I think the need to downplay the virus among the president and his supporters has grown more and more intense. So we're starting to hear the same things that that we were told early on are being told to us with even more sort of confidence and assurance that, you know, it's over, we're rounding the corner. And at this point, I think people can see here in Wisconsin, we've had 1,788 deaths up to this point. The entire country of Japan has had fewer deaths, 1,721. That's a country of 127 million. There's only 5.8 million in Wisconsin. There is no way that we should have such a high death toll. I can only hope that in 2021, we start addressing this, most importantly, by sending out a consistent message.
And we have to leave it there. Thanks to Mark Johnson for joining us from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at U.S. preparations for pandemics leading up to COVID-19.